From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Jeff Schmidt. This is The Exchange. Today, the view of the world from the newspaper columnist. First, we listen back to an interview with former Des Moines Register columnist John Carlson. Carlson retired at the end of last year after 31 years at the paper, the last 11 as columnist. Then, a conversation with the new Des Moines Register columnist, Kyle Munson. Munson moves into John Carlson's former position after working as the Register's feature writer and music critic. The View from the Printed Page with John Carlson and Kyle Munson. Coming up, but first, news from NPR. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Jeff Schmidt. Today, a view of the world from the eyes of the newspaper columnist. Later in the hour, my conversation with Kyle Munson. Munson was named columnist for the Des Moines Register earlier this year. Prior to that, he'd worked as the paper's features writer and music critic. But first, we listen back to an interview with the gentleman Kyle Munson succeeded at the paper, John Carlson. Carlson worked for 31 years at the Register, the last 11 as columnist. Ben Kiefer talked with John Carlson last December and asked him if he was sending any specific message to his readers in his final column.
It was mostly a thank you to the institution that I worked for 31 years and to the readers for paying attention. And sticking with me. A lot of them did, and I very much appreciate that.
How did you get into the business of journalism? This is in the mid-70s, right?
Yeah, 1974. I did 4 years in the military and then finished college and had, I think I took 2 journalism courses in college.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had heard there was a job opening at the Fort Dodge Messenger, and I called them and they invited me up for an interview, and I told them I was well-trained in my college years as a journalist, and I knew how to write headlines and lay out pages and write stories, and I knew how to do none of it. And so I was either going to succeed or they'd fire me. But so I gave it a shot, and it worked out.
At that time, was it a long-term career objective or just something to do at that time in your life?
It was something to do. It sounded like a good way to make a living. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like the way I'm going into retirement. I really don't know what I'm going to do. But I got into the news business because I thought it seemed an interesting way to spend my time. And if I could make some pay the rent doing it, well, that's what I decided to do.
Was that something that you immediately warmed up to and said it immediately clicked and you said, yeah, this is a career?
I think so. I think I did as I think back on it, and I haven't really given it a lot of thought lately. It is a long time ago, but I did immediately like it. I was intimidated because I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's better than going into starting a career thinking you know everything. I went into the career certain that I knew nothing. So I soaked up everything I possibly could, and I worked with some old timers who helped me, and some of it was self taught, and I read a lot of newspapers at the time, and it was kind of an on the job training thing.
Mm-hmm. Who were the people who shaped you? Most importantly, people who you say they really showed me a key to being a reporter or a columnist.
I think mostly in my pal over in the Cedar Rapids Gazette. I worked there for 2 years. Mike Dupree over there, who was a terrific columnist, a City Hall reporter when I got there, and then became a columnist. Mike is a true pro, and it wasn't a like I sit down and talk, Mike, how do you do this? How do you do that? I just kind of watched. Mm-hmm. and learned when I came to the Register. There were guys at the Register that were, I mean, they're phenomenal. They were legends, and I was getting to work with them. Jim Flansburg, who was the political reporter, then editorial page editor and columnist, and Gene Raffensperger, who held, he was ran the Register's first news bureau. which was the first job I had at the Register. He and Jack Hovelson, who was in the Waterloo Bureau for the Register.
What you just said, phenomenal people. What puts someone in? What aspects, qualities, puts a journalist in the phenomenal category for you?
Versatility, being able to cover any story, being able to get it right every time, and then present it in such a way that people are going to read the thing. They're being good reporters and good writers.
Mm-hmm.
That makes them phenomenal, and everybody I mentioned is in that category. And there obviously there are a whole lot more, but those names just popped to mind because they were older than I was at the time, and I grew up reading these guys, knowing they were good, and what you know it was over on the sports side too, and I never covered sports, but
so you're reading these guys in your teens.
I'm sorry, what?
You're reading these guys, you said, growing up in your teens and so forth.
Yeah, I grew up reading these guys. So, I mean, they're 20 years older than me probably, some of them. And absolutely I grew up reading them before I was a teenager. Yeah. We grew up – the house I grew up in southeast Iowa in the little town of Oakville, we took the Brilliant Hawkeye, we took the Muscatine Journal, and we took the Des Moines Register. We had three daily newspapers. I grew up reading newspapers. That was our primary source of information. And so I was familiar with who these people were because people looked at bylines, at least I did. And I didn't – I mean, you know, Don Call was a columnist. Now, that was – I never imagined I would ever write a column for the Des Moines Register. But here – I read Don Call 3 days a week, 4 days a week.
11 years ago, you became a columnist for the Des Moines Register. It's very apparent to you, I'm sure, but maybe not to readers or people who just consume the news. How is the job of a columnist different than that of a reporter? What kind of transition did that entail?
It's all about pace. When I was a general assignment reporter, and I did a lot of long-term projects. I might work on a single story or series of stories about the same topic for weeks, and then do all the reporting and get things organized, and then do all the writing, and then finally it shows up a month later in the paper. A columnist, the pace, it's a 3 day a week pace that I became comfortable with it, but it took a while. It's frantic. Mm-hmm. It might not sound difficult, and I always said it beats standing on the interstate with a jackhammer. I'm not complaining about it, but it was just very different, and it took me a while to become accustomed to that. Once I became accustomed to it, it was fine, and I wrote to a length instead of writing pretty much as long as I wanted. I was writing 700 words, and so that meant I couldn't take a great deal of time doing all the reporting that I would normally do, because I didn't have room for all that information. I had to make things concise and readable, always, mm-hmm. always readable.
And I imagine as a columnist, too, you're thinking about perhaps in smaller chunks the news item or the commentary that you can deliver. I know here in radio, I can look at notes and say, yeah, that's a 20-minute conversation. And you
Absolutely.
Can look at some information and say, yeah, that's 700 words.
Yeah, and I've run into situations, and it's not unusual at all, for me to look at something and know this is a fantastic news story. This will be great for the newspaper, but I'm not the one to do it anymore because I don't have the time to devote to this. I just gave something to a guy in the office a couple of weeks ago, who's going to do a great job with it. I simply didn't have time to do it. He's going to spend a couple of weeks working on it, so.
I understand that working at your father's gas station when you were young taught you how to talk to people.
Yeah, how did you know that? Did I say I probably said that before? Maybe I wrote that. I don't know. I've written some.
Not revealing my sources, John.
No, that's fine. That was the best journalism education I got. I told you I took a couple of journalism courses in college. I took a beginning reporting course and a press law course.
Were you shy? And the your father's gas station gave you.
No,
I mean, they're just coming to pay for their gas, and you can say hi to them. What?
No, that was my problem. I wasn't shy. I talked too much, and I would insert myself into conversations with. And I'm talking. You know, I'm 10, 12 years old at the time, and he would say something. Oh, I don't know, something general like, "Hey, shut up and listen. Okay, you're a kid. Pay attention to what they're saying, and you're going to learn a lot more listening than you are talking about something you don't know anything about." I learned how to listen. And then as I got a little older, I learned how to have conversations with somebody. And so often, I always say that, and I'm probably not unique to me, but I rarely sit down and interview somebody. We call it an interview. I have a conversation with somebody.
Right.
And just like you're doing right here. You're not interviewing me. We're having a conversation, mm-hmm. and hopefully some people are listening in. But that's the way I've tried to do my business, and I learned how to do it in that gas station. I've talked to journalism classes at colleges and said you want a real educational experience to prepare you for being a journalist. Go to work at a Casey's or some place where you have to interact with the public. They look at me like I'm from Mars or something when I say that. Uh-huh. None of them ever do, I'm sure. But,
so when you want people to tell you their stories, their things they might not have ever mentioned, listening, other tips besides just listening?
Oh, well, to make the most important thing, I think, is to make someone comfortable, to make them understand that your motive isn't to – 90% of the time, your motive is not to say, aha, gotcha. The other 10%, you're probably talking to a public official who knows how the game is played. So many people I've interviewed over the years, that's the first time they've ever talked to a journalist. And they're leery, and I don't blame them. They've heard stories that make them nervous So I try to put them at ease, and the way I put people at ease, and it's honest. It's not it's to sit down and maybe talk about something else entirely, to let them know I'm a normal human being, mm-hmm. who just like they are, you know, and tell me about your kids, and oh yeah, you know, my kid did, you know, was in this activity in school, and it makes it much more comfortable for them.
Coming up, more of Ben Kiefer's conversation with columnist John Carlson, who retired last December after 31 years at the Des Moines Register. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jeff Schmidt. Tomorrow on this program, Alex Hoyer explores hunting in Iowa. The smallest contingent of Iowa pheasant hunters achieved the state's second straight record low harvest last year. We'll look at why those numbers have dipped and what to expect in the fall hunting season. Hunting in Iowa, Friday on The Exchange. Let's get back to Ben Kiefer's conversation with John Carlson, who retired last December after 31 years at the Des Moines Register.
John, I'd like to ask you about the things that will stand out. You said you don't know really what you're going to do in your retirement, but when you look back, what will you enjoy? What stories will you enjoy reflecting on as you head on into retirement most?
And it's at the Register. It's like you say. It's 31 years, 11 with the column. A lot of them have been really enjoyable. Some of them have been just awful to have to do. I'll start with one of those. In 2008, my hometown flooded. The levee west of the town of Oakville broke, and the next day I was on a an airplane with a registered photographer, and we overflew the town, and I was and seeing the little town I grew up in, and virtually every square inch of it underwater. It was horrifying. And then I got there a couple weeks later. I took a ride down there with Governor Culver and his wife, who were visiting. The town was still closed off pretty much then, and to see that was horrifying. And then I had to write about it, which was the point of the exercise.
Was it so horrible because you remember playing in those streets, being in those streets, knowing those people, those houses that were flooded?
Yeah, it was. And some of the people were being allowed back in there to get their belongings if they could in fact get to their homes. And these people I've known all of my life. Mm-hmm. And to go up to them as a news reporter and start asking them the how do you feel question, which I've loathed to do, but it was very difficult. And mm-hmm. but I did it, and I wrote about the place several times, and there is a recovery underway, and a lot of people have decided not to come back. Some are sticking it out and are rebuilding, and God bless them for it.
You mentioned another memorable story you wanted to bring up, not on the tragic side, or is it?
Oh well, yeah, but it was something I wouldn't trade. It was one of those. I told you I worked sometimes 2 or 3 weeks on a story. I worked a couple of months on this one. This was back in the early 90s. And I wrote a series of stories on the Gedkin family of rural northeast Iowa. They lost, in about a 10-year period, 5 sons, 2 daughters, and one babe, and two wives. 5 sons, 2 other wives, and 1 child to AIDS. Mm. And it was, and still may be, the greatest loss of life to that disease in a single family in the country. They were hemophiliac. The boys were. They took a blood product, like every other person with hemophilia in the United States took, and it was infected with HIV, and they all died. And
in reporting,
they allowed me to tell their story, which was unimaginable tragedy, mm-hmm. but uplifting it as well because of the courage they displayed. So,
Kim is joining us from Cedar Rapids. Good afternoon, Kim. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead. We have a couple minutes left.
Hey, John. It's Kim Sullivan from way back.
Oh, hey, Kim. How you doing?
70s.
I remember
Hi.
You. Yeah, sure.
I remember you. I have to tell them that you actually practice what you preach. I remember one of my better memories from that long ago was you bartending at my high school graduation party, and I think my brother and sisters too. So talk about
there's a good way to learn conversation, right, Kim, bartending?
Oh, I think that'd raise a couple. I think he served them strong. You know, good thing they weren't having to pay for them, right?
Well, I would live next door, so I didn't have far to drive myself. So
That's true. Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Kim.
Sound great. Have a good life.
Thank you, dear.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Kim, for calling.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk a little bit about the current crisis going on in newspapers. I don't know if this obviously now newspapers are in crisis, subscriptions dropping, ads, classifieds drying up.
We'd like to call it a challenge, Ben.
Not a crisis. Okay, we'll say the economy is a crisis. The newspapers are being challenged. People not willing to pay for online content. There doesn't seem to be an obvious business model for delivering news these days. Is this part of your reason for leaving, retiring?
No, not really. Although I will say, and I'm happy. You know that people talk about the good old days of journalism, and there were some good old days. Believe me, I think it's harder to be a journalist today than it was 35 years ago when I got into this business, by far.
Why?
Because when I became a reporter, my job was to go out, interview people, get the story, however one gathered the story, come back, write it, and put it in the newspaper the next day or that day. Now you have to take a video camera with you. You have to do your blogs. You have to do web updates. you're competing with in a 24-hour news cycle that, I mean, it just never stops, and I think it makes the challenges are much greater. There's nothing I see that's going to that's going to soften that. That's going to continue. No, it's not why I left. I'm 61 years old. I've been doing this more than half my life. You can't do it forever. Sometimes it's just time to go. The particular job I have had is changing somewhat. Obviously, there's still going to be an Iowa columnist. There's no shortage of people who want that job, and the person's still going to go out and write about Iowa. But it's changing in a very kind of a complicated way. Which is perfectly fine because the business is changing. I just chose to leave now because it was the right time for me, and I decided about a month ago to do this. I have not had any second thoughts at all. It's the right mm-hmm. decision for me and for my family. I have a new grandson, and we spend a lot of time together. Am I retiring to spend more time with my family? No, I'm but that's a positive result of it too.
So. Congratulations on the new grandson. I'm thinking, you know, he's going
oh,
to.
Thanks. He's great.
He's going to grow up in a world. He might not even know the physical newspaper hitting the doorstep.
I don't know. That could be. Well, he's only 4 months old. So you may be right. You may be right. I don't know. Some newspapers are cutting back delivery from 7 days a week to five days a week, and only home delivery 3 days a week in Detroit, I think it is. And that's a tremendous change. I hope there's always a newspaper to deliver, but I'll tell you something. One of my Christmas presents was a Kindle. Okay. I'm subscribing to the New York Times on the thing. I got up yesterday morning. We were at my wife's parents' house in Mount Vernon. And I got up and I turned on my Kindle, and there was a Sunday Times. So it's pretty convenient. And it's hard to argue with it. On the other hand, I'm paying for that subscription.
So. Mm, right. Oh, so you're paying for that subscription. So, of course, if more people would do that, then the news business would survive in better stead.
Yeah. Well, I hope it will. I hope it will. I certainly do because newspapers are so darn important. Because I mean, if you picked up today's Des Moines Register, across the top of the front page, you saw a story by Clark Kaufman, who, in my opinion, is the best reporter I've ever worked with, who wrote about how the shamefully low salaries that people at the Woodward State Hospital are making, mentally impaired people, and it's shameful on the state's part of that. Sorry, but that's where you're going to read that. You're going to read that in a newspaper.
Ben Kiefer's conversation last December with Des Moines Register columnist John Carlson. Carlson retired after 31 years at the paper, the last 11 as columnist. John Carlson's successor is Kyle Munson, who has worked as the paper's music critic and features writer. I talk to Kyle Munson next on The Exchange. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Jeff Schmidt. Tomorrow on this program, Alex Hoyer explores hunting in Iowa. The smallest contingent of Iowa pheasant hunters achieved the state's second straight record low harvest last year. We'll look at why those numbers have dipped and what to expect in the fall hunting season. Hunting in Iowa, Friday on The Exchange. Earlier this year, John Carlson retired as columnist for the Des Moines Register. His successor is former Register music critic and features writer Kyle Munson. Munson is an Iowa native, born in Cedar Falls, raised in Pottawatomie County, and he now calls Ames home. I talked with Kyle Munson a few days ago and asked him to expound on a comment he made a few months ago, calling his new columnist job the best journalism job in the state.
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. I always say that I talk about it as the best job in Iowa, and it's probably not the smartest thing to talk about during annual job review time, but I do believe it, and I say it's more sunshine and fewer meetings is kind of one way to describe it, because the whole mandate of this job is to go to every corner in Iowa and just chase down the best stories some of the most colorful characters, get to know people, drive down Main Street in one town after another. So it's really active and it's visible, and it's a lot of fun because of that. So and also I got into this whole game, the game being newspaper journalism or media in general, because I love to be a storyteller, and this is a very active storytelling role. So that's another reason why I think it's the best job in Iowa.
That whole freedom thing, it can be liberating, but I would think daunting too, having this vast landscape where you can just about go anywhere.
Yeah, it is. It's daunting because obviously you have to be able in a given week to juggle a lot of different stories in a lot of different places in the state. You've got to hope your timeline matches up with what's going on and what's a good story at a given moment when the story's hot per se. But by the same token, in this job also, because you've got that wide territory, it's liberating in the fact that instead of where so much of what the news that's generated is kind of generated out of some of these, like the Des Moines Metro and the state capitol and all these different places, where media flocks. In a sense, I'm also able to highlight stories that sometimes, would otherwise might never get told or might be glossed over. So anyway, I'm going to places where, I'm the only media on a given day in a certain town, say. So in that sense, there's less pressure than when I'm, one of many microphones or digital recorders surrounding some public official somewhere.
How much did you confer with your predecessor John Carlson about taking over for him?
Well, what I did was it wasn't a situation where I went to say John or Chuck Offenberger, whom I also worked with here at the Register, during his tenure and when I was first starting here. It wasn't a situation where I went to them before I had the job or while I was seeking the job. What I did was, after I accepted the job, then I made sure I was the first person to talk to both of them, as well as to Julie Gammack, whose father, Gordon Gammack, also was Iowa columnist. So that was what I did, because I had really benefited from just working with and talking to them, John and Chuck, when they were in their roles as Iowa columnists here. So I had enjoyed them as colleagues, and learned from them just by working with them in the newsroom. So I think the appropriate time for me to go to them was really once I had accepted the job, and then now I really do benefit from them as mentors and predecessors in this role and this legacy role here at the Register.
We talked to John upon his retirement. He was somewhat candid in his thoughts on new media and his reluctance to totally embrace it. You, meanwhile, have been proactive in social media with the paper. How have you employed the multimedia aspect in your columnist position?
Yeah, it's I've tried to be as active as possible, and in any given week, I wish there was more I could do with it. And I say that not as a I'm not as a new media cheerleader. For me, it's just been more kind of a natural outgrowth of my career. I've been able to plug it into natural points as I've developed in my career. I entered the newsroom when maybe there was one web browser on one terminal, and email was not common to what we all know about today. So, and then my job previous to this for several years was as an online editor. So, obviously I had a giant learning curve in that role, and that helped me out in a lot of ways. what I've tried to do with this is just this, again, this job is so intensively, it's an intensely interactive role with Iowa and with Iowans all around the state. In that sense, social media is perfect for the Iowa columnist. So, you know, I've got a Facebook page. I have a blog. I have an online map now where people suggest ideas of where I should go next, and they can track where I've been. My blog posts, you know, blog posts are tracked on this map online. So I use video. So I just think that all that stuff is storytelling. And I through my previous job as an online editor and working with video and everything, telling a story, being a storyteller happens, you know, whether you're shooting and editing video or whether you're putting words together on the page. So I feel all that is relevant to being a storyteller. And then social media is just such a great way to get story ideas, hash out story ideas, communicate with readers. So anyway, that all feels very natural to me.
In your former role or position, you were a feature writer, music critic, online expert for the Register. How did those experiences, what you did before this position, help you with what you're doing now?
Two things. I mean, with the music, I was a music critic for about a decade here, and so that was good in that I was a visible member of a scene. And so I would go to concerts, people would get to, they got to know my face. I would put opinions, hopefully well-considered opinions out there, and people would react, sometimes very vocally. Sometimes I miss the days of anonymous phone mails because those were a lot of fun. And now, most of that interaction is now happens online in forums or, story comments or social media, that sort of a thing. But so it was good training just for being a kind of a public, media, figure, and also interacting with the readership in that way. It got me around the state. As a features writer and a music critic, I wasn't just in Des Moines. I also, as much as possible, was roaming the state, not to the extent I am now, but I still would get to Sioux City or to Iowa City or to Northeast Iowa. I would go to these places for chasing feature stories or to go to interesting, out-of-the-way concert situations.
Yeah, music long been your passion, and that's something I actually share. And you've been a joy to follow, your many articles covering some of the heavy hitters in the music industry. I wanted to include this in the interview. Go back to some of those. What are some of those that stand out for you? Because you were, at least mine and a lot of other people's, connections to what was happening in music for Iowans.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. I tried to do that. It's you always remember, getting to meet Bono. I mean, I tracked him when he took a bus tour across Iowa as part of his, what was that called, the Heart of America tour or something like that, when he was one of his many, many ways in which he was highlighting some of his charity work for Africa. And he came to the Register newsroom as well as part of that. Getting to interview people like Paul McCartney, mm-hmm. I mean, that stuff was really special. But, by the same token, it was also special to connect with musicians all around the state. Whether it was somebody like Bob Doerr, who has, obviously a deep history with public radio, as well as being a lifelong musician in the state. I'm trying to think of some other situation, but, countless arena concerts, whether it was in Ames or in downtown Des Moines or in Iowa City or Sioux City, there's this annual folk music festival, like old school, old time country and folk music that I think now takes place on the western edge of Iowa, but at one time it was in Avoca. Going to situations like that and getting to know people. That was all good fun, yeah.
You're an Iowa born and bred. Talk about your upbringing and what led you into journalism as a profession.
I grew up, playing piano starting at age 5 or 6 and through also love to write. And so what happened was, in journalism, I was looking for a way to, in a career, I was looking for a way to write more or less on a daily basis, and newspaper journalism presented that. And again, so it was more of the aspect from storyteller. And then also early in my career, trying to merge my two loves of writing and music totally made sense in the music critic role. And I had a good mentor who was a music critic at the Register at that time. And when he moved on, I was able to make a campaign and step into that role. So that's really what I was looking for, again, as a how can I do this thing which I love to do right on a daily basis. So it was from that role that I got into journalism.
The open-ended question, and might take some diving into, but what are your favorite things about the state? What is the source of maybe your passion for the Hawkeye State? Why are we different? What makes us Iowans?
I love – it's almost like our geography being planted in the middle of the nation. I love how, in that sense, the kind of – we serve as – literally, we're a crossroads when you think about something like the Interstate 80 artery that runs through Iowa, as well as 35. But I love sometimes we're at this. I feel like we're at the center of things. Whether it's the, the caucuses, leading off kind of the presidential process in the nation. I feel like there's the agricultural roots. And so I think there's a real kind of I love being how Iowa is rooted to the land and yet not limited by that sense. I think there's a pragmatism, yet there's also a rich educational history in Iowa. And so I think it's a progressive population too in a lot of ways. So I love that. So I love, the mix of kind of reality and yet the way that Iowans also kind of dream in a lot of interesting and sometimes fun and weird ways. The county structure, the Iowa's 99 counties and the way, in some ways that's really been hit hard by, first the farm crisis of the 80s and, some of the economic realities now of the population moving to the cities and school consolidations. But I think still there's this, when I go out there, there's this, it's interestingly nicely, evenly spread population in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go out and you have all these communities in all these different areas spread around the state. And so that's great to be able to go out there and get to know people and from county to county and from town to town. Again, I realizing that, there's been this huge population shift to like the Des Moines-Ames corridor or the Cedar Rapids-Iowa City corridor or something like that. But still, Iowa has that sense of being evenly, the sense of Iowa is evenly spread around the state in a lot of ways.
Which leads me into one of your most recent articles was the stop in Independence, marking your 10,000 mile mark on your crisscross journey across the state, talking to Iowans. What did you learn from that? I know you were in a lot of different communities, but I guess there's nothing more grassroots than stopping at talking at the mom and pop shops in some of the communities across this state.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fun way to, take a little bit of a hoopla and celebrate having, driven around Iowa for 10,000 miles worth of Iowa in my first few months on the job. Independence was just another example of how, you never quite know what you're going to find in Iowa, and that's what keeps the job interesting. So. What happened is I had readers submit their suggestions, had them nominate different towns and why I should visit them to be my 10K town, to celebrate this 10,000 miles. And so Independence was nominated by Rebecca from Cedar Falls for this unique coffee shop, which just started in December. And this coffee shop has a mandate to help special needs adults by giving them quality, giving them a fair minimum wage and having a job where they can interact with the public. And it's a real kind of progressive way to a business model. And, so that was one aspect. And then there is a Munson building, which I'd never heard of in downtown Independence, which is on the National Register of Historic Places. And I still don't know all the, I don't think that it's builder, Perry Munson, is directly related to me or anything, but it's a fascinating example of building that was the longtime public library, and now there's a couple who currently live in New York, but they're going to renovate it for their own home plus some sort of retail. So the whole nature of these historic sites in Iowa in different ways they're getting used now. Independence is 6,000 people. It's a sizable small town, and it's a center for, there's a mental health institute there, and a number of businesses that are like, some of the people involved with this coffee shop I was talking about is there's a family also that has run the hardware store for decades in Independence, and there's a new agricultural museum there. There's an old, the Wapsipinicon Mill is the oldest kind of historic structure that is in downtown Independence.
I think we caught you grinding some corn in one of those.
Right, yeah. Right. So anyway, it's the example of, I met everybody from the mayor to an alpaca farmer to the assistant wrestling coach, and there's a movie that's being made about the wrestling team in Independence. So, all these things that are just constantly happening in a town like that. And it's, stories, any number of stories that you can kind of catch when you roll into a town and start talking to people on just a given day like that.
Which is interesting when we hear about small town America and a lot of times associated with the Midwest and the drying up of Main Street America. I guess maybe in some of your adventures shows that at least in Iowa, in a lot of communities, it is still vibrant.
Yeah, I think, don't get me wrong. When I roll down Main Street in Iowa, I see a lot of shuttered shop fronts, and I see the realities that have happened since, since the 80s farm crisis and our current recession and everything. But I think there are, I also do see a lot of examples of, a resurgence or some people taking a creative spin on, some restaurant or some nonprofit organization or whatever, and making a play to kind of have this revival. For instance, I was down also this past week in Elston, Iowa, which is south central Iowa, not too far west of Interstate 35, down there in Ringgold County near the Missouri border. And so Elston is, has had a tough go of it. Their population has remained fairly stagnant. A lot of the downtown infrastructure has waned. But they also have this lake development, this Sun Valley Lake that has, sprang up 40 years ago. And that has seen, tremendous growth. And so now they're trying to use that, that population, both the population that remains in the town of Elston as well as this new lake population, the permanent residents there, are trying to now reinvigorate, the original downtown and try to put some more infrastructure back there. So that's an example of, where they're making a push for it. So they've got a new nonprofit and they're trying to do things with that. That's one example. And things like that are happening around the state.
If you're just joining us, my guest today on The Exchange is Des Moines Register columnist Kyle Munson. Kyle, just a couple minutes left. I wanted to change gears here a bit and talk newspapers. For the past number of years, or at least couple years, some have folded up and closed shop entirely. Those that have survived have, a lot of them have scaled back and distributed a smaller newspaper. You've been part of the journalism landscape for some time. Where's your profession heading?
If I knew that, I would be probably in New York right now, being highly paid as some, consultant at some, event. But here's what I was telling a Rotary Club kind of exactly this thing just a few weeks ago. I believe ultimately that there's going to be an ecological issue, and, the printed page will, as we know it, will go away. It'll come down to that. I don't think that's the death of our industry. I think there will be an answer. When you look at today's iPad or, the Kindle or something like that, and you think of, okay, that interface could become more like holding a printed page, yet it's a renewable, continuous screen, a screen but not a screen, kind of an experience. So, I think there's going to be an answer. Now, is that going to be 5 years down the road? No, probably not. Having worked in online media as I have now, I realize that, there's a, you're constantly learning and trying new things, and not everything works out, and you work the, you know, you have to work the bugs out of anything. You know, for example, look at Apple's, you know, journey with the new iPhone recently. You know, so not everything works perfectly the first time. So, but yeah, I think eventually the printed newspaper as we know it will be gone, and something will be in its place that, that maybe still people love in a similar way.
Despite the way newspapers do change, columnists play an important role in our society, helping us maybe, I don't know, see ourselves in ways we may not readily identify with. What role do you see yourself playing as at the Des Moines Register and as a columnist?
Well, I, you know, I this is something I had to talk about, you know, when I was interviewing for the job, and I said a few things. A couple of them were, you know, I want to be that, I want to provide some of that fabric of, you know, for the state of Iowa, tying us all together, because as I was saying, some of that has eroded with, you know, the economic problems of main small town main streets, school consolidations, you know, losing, you know, if you lose the high school in a given community, that you lose some of that, you know, that sense of being a community. So I want to try to help knit Iowa together as the Iowa columnist, you know, as the Iowa columnist has done for, you know, more than half a century in this legacy role.
Wonderful. Kyle Munson, we so appreciate your time today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was great to talk to you.
Des Moines Register columnist Kyle Munson. Munson became the Register's columnist earlier this year with the retirement of John Carlson. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Jeff Schmidt. Thanks for listening.